to season two of the Quince Flowers podcast. My name is Peter Mason. My co-host is my sister, Caitlin Mason. And we are continuing our Dahlia deep dive, aren't we, Caitlin?
We are season two. I didn't know if we could do it.
We had a solid hiatus, but I guess we started season one in September last year, and then we're starting season two. It's about halfway through October right now.
We have started recording in September. I think the problem was it was just a really busy time when we started recording because we I guess I'll announce it now. We are speaking with people overseas. And so their Dahlia season is the complete opposite to us. So if I'd thought about it correctly or logically, I was contacting exhibitors during their show season, which is the busiest time of year. So September's just crazy for exhibitors. And then overseas in a lot of places before the snow comes or before the really cold temperatures come, people are in a hurry then to dig their tubers. So even October's a busy one for people. So that's why we weren't sure if we could do it, but we've got there. And we're going to be recording with some international guests through to November as well. And this is why we'll talk about our first guest in a moment, but that is why it's, you know, we're very fortunate to have the first guest on that we do, because we did record in September, and in hindsight, it's not the time to record with international guests during peak exhibition season. But anyway,
yeah,
I'm digressing.
These are the things you learn when you take a podcast international.
I know. Who would have thought? Anyway, that's all right.
Okay. Now, Caitlin, let's just do a little bit of, I guess, just talking about what you and I are up to. So our season is just kicking off. You and I have been taking lots of cuttings. How's the patch at the moment?
The patch is ready. I've got some amendments on there. I've got it mulched. I mulch because I get so much grass seed in where I plant that everything's mulched already. I know that's not the usual way, but down the planting line, I pull back all the mulch. So there is a space there to plant. All the irrigation's up. Most of the supports are in. I've just got a few more things to do. Like I'm using flower netting for the pom patch. And the giant patch, I'm doing a different staking method than the fencing system. So that's got to go up, and then I'll put some shade up a bit later. And I think that's it. I think I'm pretty much ready to start planting as soon as I get these tuber sales done. And it's not my tuber sale. It's a Queensland Dahlia Society tuber sales. But we'll go into that in a second. So I'm pretty much ready to plant. I've just got more cuttings to do, basically. That's the only holdup.
Yeah, wow. That's a very strong position to be in. And I don't think, I suppose we didn't mention it, but like last season, you cleaned up at these shows. And so I'm looking forward to what this season brings you. And it sounds like you're hitting the ground running for sure.
Well, I don't know about cleaned up. I had a few things in my favour. One was the rain. So a lot of my fellow competitors got flooded in Brisbane. So sure that helped, but I am going to try and be more competitive this year. I've been kicked out of novice, so I'll be entering intermediate and opens, especially for giants. I'll be in the open classes, I think, just because I've got so many giants that I run out of spots to enter them in, basically. But Peter, tell me, what are you doing in your Dahlia patch?
Oh, everything's a bit of a mess here, Caitlin, as you know. Like I'm moving at the end of the year. So we're in October now, so I've got two more months, I guess. And so I haven't got anything in the ground. I've taken garden beds out. I've got things in pots, and luckily most of the order that I did this year hasn't arrived yet. And I'm not super rushed, but the things I do have, like the tubers I've got from you and the tubers from last year, I've been taking cuttings from and getting ready. But yeah, it's all a little bit of a mess. And I do want to try and be do some exhibiting, but we'll see how we go. It's going to be a very messy year. I have still got my CE links going though. I still have a ton. Maybe I've cut down the number, but I've got about 30 or 40 CE links going, which I'm excited to see bloom.
I don't think it'll be messy. So just for everyone that's aware, Peter lives in Brisbane. He's moving to Toowoomba. they're finding a house, but in the interim, he's going to grow in a couple of our family's gardens. So his dahlias will be spaced out over my garden, grandma's garden, whomever else he can find to plant in there.
Look, it's surprisingly not that hard to get people on board. It's just like, hey, do you want me to grow a ton of flowers in your front yard? Like, it's like, yeah, sure, that'd be great. Like, so that's in my favor, but like, yeah, I am looking forward to having something permanent and really, because we've moved house every couple of years for the I don't know, last 5-6 years, and it's like every time I get my soil just like perfect and on song and just singing, and then we move. And so like I'm really looking forward to being able to build soil and really, I don't know, yeah, put some roots down, so to speak.
And you've moved from Inverell, which is a cold climate, to Brisbane, which is a hot climate, and then your final move, or, well, I hope it's your final move for a while, is Toowoomba. So it's a temperate climate, so then with red clay soil, so then you'll have to adjust everything again and get your head around it, which is, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for you, so, yeah.
Me too, but also, like, stressed, but anyway, it's okay.
No, don't be stressed. Dahlias shouldn't be stressful. You just have to come here and get your gardens ready, darling.
Yeah, I'm onto it. I'm planning it all. But yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at, Caitlin. Now, should we talk about dahlias we're excited to grow this season? Because I've got a ton.
Have you received that box I've sent you?
No, but I'm expecting it today for sure.
Oh, I sent it express.
Yeah, no, I was seriously expecting it yesterday, but it didn't arrive. So it'll be here today.
Yeah, it's huge.
Okay, yeah. I saw the price. The price it cost to send. Oh, my gosh.
So I did a big white styrofoam box because I get them all the time for free. Secondhand, so that is full of dahlias for Peter, some of which he'd given me and then lost in the Brisbane like floods and rain events, and then some are new.
Yeah, Winky Robot's coming back to me, I believe, which it didn't survive the rain here, but it's coming back, so stoked.
I'm pretty sure I popped that in. I could never be sure. It took me a day to do it, so it's taken me a while. What dahlia have you grown before and you're looking forward to growing?
I've got a couple. Obviously, like everything that you're sending me, I'm excited about, because you know you can pick the ones that we're gonna do well exhibiting and that type of thing.
No, I don't think that's the truth.
The real Devon Apollo has arrived to me, because I've been growing the imposter for quite a while. I'm stoked about that. I've got Emery Paul. Taj from Cajun Flower Farm sent me Emery Paul, which is like just ridiculously giant. Like there's a photo floating around online of this lady just being dwarfed by this flower. So I'm excited about that. And my seedlings, I don't think I'm going to find anything super amazing in my seedlings this year, but it's another step in the right direction. So,
yeah,
working towards it.
So Peter's working towards bulls that grow well in Queensland.
Yep. And this is kind of like the third year of that trying.
And so what one that you've grown before that you're looking forward to growing again?
Probably Winky Kernel.
Oh yeah.
I saw the potential last year and I was like, yes, this is a good stock. This puts out, this is so deep. This is so huge. The colour is so great. I've got something that can win here. I just got to get the timing right.
Yeah, and that's...
So I've got multiple plants and I'm going to kind of spread them out and, yeah, I'm very keen for that.
Manipulate it. And one of the episodes which we recorded last night, it's not today's episode, but it will be on in a couple of weeks, does help with timing, doesn't it, Peter? It's a really good discussion.
Yeah, amazing. Just another one of those people that you talk to and they just are open book and they're just like, hey, here's 20 years of knowledge. This took me 20 hard years of learning. Here it is for free. Just have it, you know, like love it. Love those kind of people.
Mm. And he's got no secrets. Anyway, it's amazing.
Caitlin, I'm sure the listeners would like to know, what are you looking for going?
At the end of last season, I made a list of all the giants that are exhibition quality in Australia, giant decoratives and giant cactus. And I've been working hard on getting them. So actually, I might just pull up my list here and then we'll go through it, shall we? Okay. So Care Magic. These are ones that I haven't grown before. So Care Magic, I'm super excited for. Elvis Supreme. Oh, Devin Brandy, Zorro, Devin Quest, Rana Tammy, We Own a Mat. Shall I keep going? I have grown Maxman before, but I really like it. In my research, I can't find the Alden Climax that has been bred in Australia. Now, there is a Alden breeder, and he was breeding in the 70s and 80s in Victoria, and he has bred another one of my favourites called Alden Rocket.
Yep, I know that one.
But it is my hunch, and it's just a hunch, and I've got to grow it to see that Alden Climax is actually Almond Climax, which is an American variety. It's a giant pink decorative, and it's a really good form depending on the stock. So that's what I'm excited to see if my hunch is right, if Alden Climax is actually Almond's Climax. And there might be, I might be wrong, it might be actually Alden Climax bred in Victoria and a relative or, you know, from the same garden as Alden Rocket. But I've got like old records, Dahlia databases, and it's not on there at all, Alden Climax. So I'm excited to research that more. I've asked a few people, but no one's sure. So until I grow it, I won't actually be able to say.
It sounds plausible, you know, like Alvin, Almond, you know.
Yeah, Almond or Alden. And then
Alden, yeah.
Alden and Almond. And then both of the second names is Climax. So I'm not sure. So we'll see about that. The other one I'm super excited for is Gay Triumph. Hopefully I've got good stock of that. It's a big orange, beautiful cactus giant.
And those Graham Wakefield ones, that's pretty special too. The Bombardier.
Oh, yeah. So Bombardier and Wyoming. And then another one I'm really looking forward to trying is a Wakefield impersonator, and it's a large, so it's a beautiful yellow cactus. So that'll be super amazing. And then another one I'm looking forward to is Clearview Edie. So that'll be super good too, I think.
Yeah.
And then, I've got that on the heat bed and it's got four little shoots popping up. So I'll be taking lots of cuttings off that. I think that's all. I think, yeah. And, one that I've really wanted to get and I keep missing out is called AC Jerry. And it is... a cracker. Anyway, hopefully next year I'll get it. Anyway, that's my giant. I have to fit in a little giant chat at all times.
Now that we've been talking about all these tubers that we're excited about, should now we run through the details of the Queensland Dahlia Society tuber sale that's happening?
Oh, yeah, there's a few things on for Queensland Dahlia Society. On the 22nd of October, we're having a tuber sale. It's at the Toowoomba Farmers Markets near Cobbinco. You'll see me there and Wayne Rakoska and some other fellow growers, so it'll be a big morning. Tuber sales won't start till 7 a.m., so no one will have access to the tables until 7 a.m., so you're free to mingle around the store, but we're just going to say 7 a.m. you can look at our stock because we need that time to get organized because it was so busy last year. The same for the other tuber sale that will be happening for Queensland Dahlia Society. So that's the 29th of October, and that's down at the Wed family in Currabell, so in northern New South Wales, just near Byron Bay. Queensland Dahlia Society covers northern New South Wales and Queensland, and their store opens at 8 a.m. so no one will have access till 8 a.m. there. Bring your own bags. We'll have cash and FPOS available. From memory, it's $10 for garden varieties and $15 for exhibition varieties. And we will, I know Queensland, I haven't talked to the guys in New South Wales yet, but there'll be heaps of garden and exhibition varieties. So come along.
Probably more exhibition varieties than garden varieties, I'd say, like knowing the Queensland Dahlia Society.
Well, to be honest, I've got a lot of garden varieties. And I need to make space for all the giants I'm growing. So I am sort of getting rid of some of my garden varieties. They're still beautiful flowers. It's just that I just can't. I've been capped at a certain number and I can't grow any more than that.
They're not really. I think the ones that you call garden varieties, I think a lot of people would kind of call cut flower varieties.
More like cut flower varieties, yeah. So definitely more like cut flower varieties. They're not garden varieties. They're like stuff like Juliet or help me out, Peter. We call it Glenmark Sophie.
Is that going there? Wow.
Yeah, wow. There'll be a few there.
Hot tip, try and get those tubers.
Not Glenmark Sophie. It's a beautiful flower.
Amazing. I love
it. You go, Pete.
So the 22nd in Queensland and then the Northern New South Wales one is on the 29th.
Yeah. Toowoomba, 22nd, Currabell on the 29th.
All the details, I mean, just head to the Facebook page and they'll be there. Yeah. Is that right? The Queensland Dahlia Society Facebook page. Also, speaking of the Dahlia Societies, the Dahlia Society of Australia has their conference coming up as well. That's June 9th to 12th, so right there, beginning of winter. There's loads of talks, super interesting. Lots of first-hand experience and people running through. There's a talks about new Dahlias that are being bred, and also a really cool aspect is the auction they do where a lot of super rare and just brand new Dahlias are put up for auction. So, yeah, again, that one is just there in June 9th and 12th.
9th to 12th, and it's in South Australia this year. So there's a save at the date also on Queensland Dahlia Society's social media page. So worth thinking about. It gives you something to look forward to after the season ends. You're like, oh, cool, now I'm going to go talk about dahlias all weekend.
It's a like-minded group of people for sure.
Yeah, beautiful location, so it'd be super fun. And then we've got spring into dahlia season luncheon with Warren Vigor. So the president of the Dahlia Society of Australia is going to Tasmania. So he's going to have a luncheon in Devonport. That's Saturday the 23rd, and then in Hobart on Sunday the 24th. So that'll be fun. And if you head over to Warren Vigor's Instagram page, you can see more details there. Or, of course, if you're a member of the Tasmanian Dahlia Society, so that's worth thinking about as well.
You could also see pictures of Warren Vigor living it up in the USA. He's having a great time over there.
Yeah, well, he's actually home now. And just on that, while Warren was in America living his best life, he has also been helping us line up some amazing, amazing, amazing American guests.
Yes.
So we are super grateful to him. He's been doing the hard yards over there, saying, hey, in, you know, I can't do Warren's voice, but hey, you want to be on this podcast? I don't know. That's not what he sounds like, but he's just, you know, he's a great guy, and we are very grateful for him. And I also should say a very special thank you to Steve Cox in Victoria. He has also been helping us line up some international guests, and has been, you know, a person for me to just discuss, you know, timing wise and when would be the best time to, you know, bug some of these guests that Warren hasn't lined up, you know, because Warren's lined up a lot for me. But
yeah.
Anyway, so a very special thanks to Stephen Cox as well. I guess that brings us to season two.
Now, we did mention that we're going to be getting some international guests for season two, and starting off is Christine Ulrich from Santa Cruz Dahlias over in California in USA. Now, Christine, she doesn't really need any introduction. If you've been growing dahlias, I'm sure you've heard of her. She's done a lot of amazing work with breeding the KA series of dahlias. And also, I remember a couple of years ago, just when I had started being interested by the topic, she had released her book, which was called Dahlia Breeding for the Farm, Florist, and Home Gardener. And it very clearly laid out, this is where you start. If you want to begin dahlia breeding, this is the process. And she went through from start to finish, you know, really clear instructions and great photos of the process. So it's helped a lot of, helped a lot of us. And I think definitely helped the dahlia as well. I'm sure she's helped introduce some new dahlias because of that book. So if you wanted to follow Christine over on Instagram at Santa Cruz Dahlias, and her husband also has a page called Dahlias Please. And that's kind of a behind the scenes that I really enjoy following as well. So Caitlin, I think there's nothing more to say. Do you want to get into this interview?
Thanks for joining us, Christine. This is awesome.
Yeah.
We won't take up too much of your time because I see how busy you are.
Well, it's been pretty busy. We've been in our show season right now. So,
sorry, you do a lot of breeding because you have your kind of cut flower cultivars and you also have the show quality cultivars.
Right. Yeah. So I hybridize for cut flowers and I hybridize also for the show flowers as well. So I kind of live in both worlds, but they're both very different. The flowers that are for show have to look like, you guys know, a certain way and, you know, follow a lot more rules than the cut flowers. So,
yeah.
So the cut flowers, I'm more interested in like new colors, more complex colors, maybe colors that have some gray in them, those kinds of things that really don't sit well as much with American Dahlia Society. But maybe we can make some inroads. I don't know.
If anyone can, it's you, I think, Christine.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, I mean, the American Dahlia Society now is looking at, they have a committee that does cut flowers now as part of the American Dahlia Society. And so they're kind of looking at talking to florists and designers and finding out how the American Dahlia Society can help them and, you know, different things that they can do for the cut flowers, because they realize that that's a really big part of dahlia growing is that industry, those farmers too. So I think it's really good that they're doing that, because I think the American Dahlia Society would probably bring in more younger people, people that have a lot of good ideas, are really good with color. I mean, amazingly good with color. So I'm excited about seeing where that goes. It just started, you know, maybe a month ago, and there's a small committee set up to do that. So we'll see.
We'll see where it goes. Do you think that you'll start seeing maybe some cut flowers in shows?
Well, I think they're just now just thinking about that and how they could do that. I mean, I'm putting some of my cut flowers into the shows just to see, you know, how they're accepted and if they can kind of bridge a little. But I'm not sure if we'll see them right off the bat, because it's a little bit of you have to, you know, if you're in the American Dahlia Society and there are so many rules and things that you have to, the flower has to look a certain way, have a certain form, all that. And if it doesn't have that, then, you know, usually it doesn't do well at the show. So I don't know. I'm hoping, because I think we need some more colors.
Now, I'm sure there's not many people who don't know you out there, but for the rare few who don't, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your dahlia patch?
Okay. I'm Christine Albrecht, and I've been growing dahlias for the last 17 years, and I have a quarter acre dahlia patch about 5 minutes from my home, and I grow about 1,500 dahlias there, and then I also grow here at my house in my front yard. Our house is such, it's situated on the back of the property, so I have a pretty big front yard. But we are in a suburban neighborhood, so it's maybe 20 feet by 25 feet. It's not very big, but I grow about 300 plants there. And and I've been hybridizing pretty much since the beginning. I started maybe a couple years after I started growing dahlias. I used to hybridize giant pumpkins with my son. So we started out in the giant pumpkin world for like 7 years and learning a lot about hybridizing, you know, protecting the blooms so that bees can't just spread whatever pollen. So we did a lot of hand pollination back then. And then when I got into growing dahlias, my husband ran a bed and breakfast. And when our kids were getting older, we have two kids, they were like, "Mom, you know," and my son didn't want to do the dahlia, the pumpkin growing anymore. My husband said, "Why don't you start growing some flowers for the bed and breakfast?" And so I did that and really got into it. I thought, well, maybe I'll just grow a few, but then I'm kind of the person that jumps in big. So then I went from, you know, just a few to 60 to hundreds and now to a little, almost 2,000. I think I've grown 2,000 in the past. So that's kind of it. I mean, and then in 2020, my husband and I wrote a book on dahlia hybridizing. And the reason that I got into doing that was when I first started hybridizing, there wasn't a book on it for dahlias. You had to kind of search out the information. I mean, if you were lucky enough to have someone in your dahlia society that was doing hybridizing, and I was lucky that way, I got some information from that. But it did take me a few years to understand that if you don't want all singles as seedlings, that you need to cull those out before the bees start spreading the pollen, because the first 2 years, I think 99% of everything I grew was a single, and I was a little frustrated. I was almost ready to quit. And so once I learned how to do it, and feel really lucky that I have a sister-in-law who's done a lot of hybridizing of other flowers, that I was able to learn so much from her, and then able to then write this book so that other people didn't have to spend, you know, years being sort of frustrated with, if they wanted to grow, you know, fully double dahlias, then they wouldn't have to go down that years of road of being really frustrated with growing just singles. So anyway, I think that's kind of it. I show dahlias. I hybridize for both show dahlias and for cut flowers. And I kind of got into more hybridizing for cut flowers because you know, I was following along with Florette, who you guys probably know, Erin from Florette, and she was doing her dahlia book at the time and was saying, there's some colors that are kind of missing here. And I think it would be great to get some colors going. And so I'm like, oh, maybe I could do that. And so then I started with that. And also Jan, who I work with at the farm, she's really into color. And so we work together really well on thinking about color, and she's really great at choosing good colors. So we had a good time doing that. So it's been years now. I'm trying to think how many years, you know, like more than 15 years I've been doing this and kind of still learning. I feel like I'm very much still learning.
Yeah, it's interesting to talk to like some of the, you know, growers here in Australia that are getting on in the years and been growing their whole entire life. And they say the same thing, as each year you learn something new. Like if you're not really paying enough attention.
Every time you look in your garden, you learn something. If you look at the plants.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I just learned this year that people who grow in really hot climates, which California, coastal California is not that hot. We live about a quarter mile from the Pacific Ocean, so it's really cool here generally. We're like in the 70s, 80s. It's rare to get into the 90s or the 100s here. But you know, some people in the central part of the country, they get really hot there. And I learned from Freilich Farm that she plants her dahlias early. And then in the middle of the season, like in July, she cuts her plants all the way down to the ground and then kind of gives them a break during the hottest part of the season. And then they reboot, which they always do if there's not frost coming, they reboot and full plants and a new round of flowers in the fall-winter if it doesn't get too hot. I just learned that.
So all the way down. She just
what?
She chops them down nearly to the base.
Wow. Yeah.
And then the flowers and everything in that second round just as high of a quality as in prior to cutting them down?
Yeah, that's what she says. And last year I cut some of mine down really early and didn't dig them out, and they went into full plants and bloomed again. And in some ways they were even better because it seems like in the fall it's cooler here and we don't get powdery mildew as badly. And so, and the plants looked great, just so lush and green. So, I mean, that's something people can do for sure too if they have really hot climates. Do you guys have really hot areas?
We would get up to around that 100 pretty consistently through our summer. So 100 Fahrenheit, which would be like 34, 35, I guess, degrees. And yeah. You're sitting at around 26 degrees in our talk. It sounds, if that's about 70, that 80 Fahrenheit. So yeah, we do have that challenge with heat, which is a real struggle. And yeah, probably like your friend, when it does start cooling down, you get those colder nights is when they really come into their own. So, Christine,
our shows are in fall. So the first month of fall is when all our shows are.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we plant later and then you have to baby them along through those hot months. But a lot of the exhibition growers grow in shade. And I do find the flowers are bigger in the cooler climate. So a lot of the hotter places can't grow the giants like the cooler places can.
Oh, because it's too hot for the giants then?
Yeah, and they don't get the depth or the size.
I've heard it explained to me as that they grow a little bit too quickly to keep on continuously putting on layers and layers of petals. Yeah. They kind of are rushed and they will very quickly open their centers here.
That's kind of what happens to us at the end of the season with all the giants too. So the first part of the season, they're really full, and then at the end of the season, they can go down to like five sets or five rounds of petals and pop their centers, which is good for hybridizing, but probably frustrating for a show.
Yeah, bald dahlias as well are notorious for that here in our climate, as don't hold their centers for very long at all.
Yeah, ours are starting to, some of my dahlias have been in the ground since February, which is pretty early for planting dahlias out, but those are starting to get powdery mildew now, and they're starting to pop their centers more easily and lose their back as well, like lose their back petals. They start to just start falling off, you know, so then I know the season's kind of getting towards the end.
You're like, no, but I guess
I know. Not yet.
But your season is all year long, I always think, Christine, and I watch your videos. And anyway.
Yeah, it feels like it sometimes for sure. But I just loved starting dahlias from seed. That's really my favorite part. And hybridizing is really my favorite part. I mean, the shows are fun, but, you know, when you wake up and there's a new variety that's popped open overnight, it's just too fun to watch that and see what's going to happen. But it is a numbers game. This year I planted 1,000 seeds and plants, and, you know, I've taken out 600 of them so far, and I've got quite a few more to pull out. And, you know, so many of them are just not that great, or they're not really. I have hybridizing goals, so if I already have enough apricot and those are pretty good and I like them, then I'm if I get another apricot and it's not pushing me towards any of my goals, I might just take that one out if it's not any better than the ones I'm already growing. So even though it would look good and, you know, we could sell it and people would like it, it's just, you know, we just take out when we, when it doesn't meet our goals. So that's kind of hard sometimes to do, but.
And you can't keep everything.
Say that again?
You can't keep everything.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah. You'd have to have a really big farm to do that and so much time.
Absolutely. Christine, speaking, so you've got 1,000 seedlings with the other 1,000, say, and what percentage of that would be cut flower versus exhibition in that mix?
I probably have, well, maybe a quarter in exhibition flowers and three quarters in seedlings and cut flowers, I would say. Although some of my seedlings are for exhibition, like Kay's Papa John, which is one that came out last year. That one's doing really well at the shows. For a large dahlia, it's really full and it pretty much pumps out the bloom. So I'm really happy with that one here in California. I'm curious to see how it does in other parts of the country. But it did win the Daryl Hart Award, which is one, the top award in the American Dahlia Society. We send our, if you're thinking of having a dahlia kind of grown in other parts of the country. So they grow it in like New York, which is the opposite of California, and parts of the, in the middle of the country where it's a lot hotter. And then they score it. And then if it scores higher than the other ones that are in that, so like an A or double A, if it scores higher than that, than anybody else in the country, then you get that award. And so that's what Papa John got last year. And so people like to grow sometimes those ones that win the awards and see if they grow well in their parts of the country, since it pretty much did well in all climates.
And for those at home, it is amazing. It's a big, white, informal deck, and it looks really clear and almost like a Himari gold, but white, but even prettier. It's stunning. There's this photo with the black background here that I'm looking at. Anyway, it's not in Australia, but hopefully one day.
Yeah, and that was an open pollination. So, you know, a lot of the good seedlings that I get too are from open pollination, although I really enjoy doing the hand pollination because you can really you know what genetics are in there. And even though when you see your seedling for the first time, if it's not showing what you're hoping to get, you can cross it with its siblings, with the other ones that are like it. And sometimes you can really draw out those genes that you're hoping to get. And so, but sometimes just out of the gate, you get a good one, like Kay's Papa John, Kay's Cloud. No, Kay's Cloud was a hand pollination, but some of the other ones, Kay's Khaleesi, which is another one that's a big one. And those were both open pollination. So I do cull out anything that I don't want to have crossed. And so at the end of the season, my field looks pretty spotty because I'm just down to what pollen I would like to have those hybridized to. So
you do a lot of culling at the end of the season, don't you? Like anything that you don't want in the mix.
Yes, exactly. Like even color, form, you know, size. But, you know, like with hand pollination, I try to, you know, hybridize really closely what I want with that first and then open the field up to open pollination, which is great. I get thousands of seeds that way. I mean, you get so many seeds.
Yeah, I bought your book when it came out, and I kind of follow that exact principle here. Although I must admit, like I'm a little bit lazier, I guess would be the way to put it, is I do a lot of my hand pollination, like literally by hand, where I'll just kind of dust the pollen onto my hand and then another dahlia. It seems to work quite well for me, but at the scale I'm at it, you know, I can get away with it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, that works out really well. And the bees do a really good job. And, you know, so there's different ways to do it. And I don't know if any is really better than the other. It's just, it might be, I like hand pollination when you've covered up all the blooms and then you share the pollen, because then I kind of know what's in there a little bit more. Like if you are pushing towards something, you may be able to push a little bit more towards it. It's just difficult in dahlias because they are octoploids, which means they have a lot of genetic material. And so it's kind of frustrating.
Christine, I've been thinking of a really simple way of explaining the difference between, say, like an octoploid and a diploid. But an octoploid, essentially, you've got four times the amount of genes. And the reason that gives us so many forms in our dahlias is there's lots and lots of room for error. Would that be the simplest way you could say it?
Yeah, it could be error or lots and lots of room for combinations too.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got, you know, four sets from your seed parent and four from your pollen parent. And then those can come together. And there's just so much variety within that. I mean, I think in the book I show like a palm dahlia that shows forms that came off of that palm dahlia of cactus, you know, informal deck, formal decorative. So you can see how much mixing happens when you get an octoploid together. Most flowers are not octoploids, and most fruits and things too. I know strawberries are, but there aren't that many really out there. So that's why dahlias have so many forms.
I just think it's interesting that you're an exhibition grower, but you are 100% organic. That must be pretty rare would be rare in Australia. Is it rare in the US?
It is pretty rare in the US, and like I've given talks on it, and even at the end of the talk, people will go, does it really work? But, you know, at the San Leandro show, I got best in show. My friend Iris, who also is a organic dahlia grower, she just got best of show down in San Luis Obispo. So we do spray, but we spray with sprays that are considered OMRI, O-M-R-I approved. I don't know if you have those there, yeah. But it's, yeah. So like I spray with a horticultural oil, it's called Monterey Bay horticultural oil. And that's what I spray like every 7 to 10 days for powdery mildew. So it keeps the powdery mildew down so my plants stay healthier. And then I spray with a spinosad based product called Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew. And that is like spinosad is what most people put on their cats and dogs for fleas. So it's what you spray onto the leaves and into the flower buds. And so if you have, you know, like cucumber beetles or something like that chewing on things, then they chew it and then it kills them. So we do spray, but we spray with all organic and we don't do any systemic fertilizers either, myself or Iris. We do a lot of work on our soil in the fall. So we bring in compost if we feel it's necessary. We do soil tests from time to time. And then we also do a cover crop. I don't know if that's something people do too much there, but a cover crop is pretty amazing because it has like five different seeds that are growing at different levels. It's like vetch, bell beans, things like that. And they basically feed the biology in the soil because it's the biology in the soil that's really feeding the plants. And so when we let that grow, it's feeding, you know, once we take our dahlias out, there's not really food for the biology because they eat off the sugars on the root ends. And so when you take that out, you want to start growing something right away so that you can keep feeding that biology. Because if they kind of go into hibernation, you need to then wake them up again and get them going. But if you can keep them going, then they're there right when you plant your plants in. And for me, I hardly do any fertilizing. So what I do is I do a cover crop, I weed whack it down, I occulate it or cover it with a plastic like tarp. It's a little thicker than that. And I leave it on there for 6 weeks before I plant. And what happens is the biology comes up, takes care of all that plant material. They eat it, you know, they poop in the soil. And so then you've got like really great soil. And also if you leave the roots in the ground, so you've just cut it off instead of rototilled it, then you're keeping the structure of the soil just perfect. So those roots, when they die, they're like little straws that go down so that when it rains a lot, instead of the rain pooling on the top and running off and pulling your soil with it, it goes down into the soil. And it works really well. I mean, I think that's the best thing I've done for my dahlias is do a cover crop. And and I don't really have to fertilize very much. And we have a long season here. Like we go from February to to November, which is a really long season. And sometimes in the middle of the season, I'll add compost, like a shovel full of compost per plant, and pretty much that. Sometimes add a little bit of blood meal just based on what the plants are looking like. But, you know, having your soil, you know, that rich and ready for your plants is nice. And also, I don't have to wait for the climate to be perfect for me to plant either. So it could be raining. Let's say I started some cuttings. I can just put my plants right into the ground. I don't need to wait for the soil to be perfect for tilling or anything like that, because I don't turn my soil over. And what also is nice about that is you don't get a lot of weed issues because you're not bringing up weed seeds that are, you know, farther down in the soil that wouldn't have sprouted. You've got them, brought them up to the surface, and now you've got weed issues. So I really don't spend very much time weeding at all in my quarter acre because of that. And I do also mulch with rice straw. So in California, we grow a lot of rice. And so the byproduct of that is rice straw. And so rice straw is, I guess, fairly inexpensive. It's $12 for a big bale of it, and it can cover quite a bit. And since we are hot here in California and dahlias like their roots to keep cool, we put the rice straw. So you will, you know, you occulate, you plant your plants, then you put the rice straw around, and that also helps keep any weed issues down, but it also helps keep you from having to water as much, since we have big issues with water in California. And we're on our third year of drought. So the more you can mulch, the better, the less water you'll need to use.
And Christine, do you also, with the stalks and stems of the dahlias, do they go back into the soil, or do you avoid that for disease?
I don't really compost those back in, just in case. Like last year, we had this kind of unusual rain, and we had some phytophthora. I don't know if you know what that is, like a bacteria or fungus in the soil, and it kind of attacked the roots, and it was kind of on some of the stems too. So I'm like, I don't want this in my garden. So I took those out. So yeah, so usually I cut it down, and then I don't compost it. We have a green waste system here in California where you can put them in your green waste can, and they take it to the dump, and then they process it with heat, and then people can buy it if they want. So we have a pretty good system for that. So I don't do that. I bring in compost that's made if I need to do it. I would like to learn how to do that more, but that's like, seems like a big job to learn that well, mm-hmm. and to make enough for a garden that's a quarter of an acre too.
Yeah,
you need a lot. And Christine, so you are a big advocate of no dig, which I think is awesome. But, you know, you are in your third year of drought, and I see a lot of people in the UK struggling with the lack of water around, the lack of rain. Do you have anything to suggest to them to help in this situation? Like, we're sort of used to it here in Queensland, but in Australia. But
well, there's a couple of things that, you know, help. I mean, started doing a cover crop and having a lot of organic matter in your soil is really good. So if you can do that, that really helps preserve the water in your soil, and then it won't run off. It'll go down and be in your soil. So I think that's key. Sometimes when it gets really hot here, I do what's called pulse watering. And I think the Winky Way guy, what's his
John
name?
John
Menzel. He did a lot of pulse watering, and that's what I think is really good on hot days. I do that here in California. If we get over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, then I will do some pulse watering. I'll do short waters that day, or if I know it's coming up hot.
I saw that you put that story up on Instagram a little while ago where you were just literally like wetting down the plants on hot days. And I know a lot of people were like, shock, horror, like, you're going to burn the plants. But we do that here. I personally do that here all the time. And it's amazing how quickly you'll go from a wilted plant back to a full, happy, you know, growing dahlia, like 10, 20 minutes at least.
Yeah, I think that's really good when they get super flagged or wilty, because if they get to some point, they won't recover either. And also, I notice when it's really hot, the stems tend to, you know, curve over, and sometimes they won't recover, or they will recover, but they'll always have a big bend in them. So if you can keep your plants hydrated, I mean, I know that the ground is hydrated enough, but they just can't bring in enough moisture to support their whole leaf canopy, which is hard to do. Yeah, I know that video that I put on Instagram, people could not believe it. They thought that the leaves would burn, and you know, it seems like it's worth it even if a couple leaves get crunchy compared to having your whole plant go down, to me. Yeah. But I don't really see that too much even when I do that, and I'll be out there for, you know, morning, afternoon, and evening to do it if it gets really hot here. Seems an easy way to save it. Yeah.
I'll even put a little bit of, like, we have like seaweed. We use a lot of seaweed kind of byproducts here. And yeah, I'll even put a little bit of that in a spray bottle and go around and put that on, and they just thrive, you know, so shortly after you apply it.
Yeah.
With the no dig, is there anything different that you are practicing when it actually comes to lifting the tubers? Because you do lift each year. Do you try and avoid as much disturbance as possible when it comes to lifting them?
Yeah, I just try to just dig the tuber out and then, you know, shake the soil off in place. I mean, we are disturbing the soil somewhat, but what I do is immediately I'll do one row, digging one row, and then immediately plant my cover crop in it. Yeah. So it might take me a month to process all my tubers and dig and divide them. But if I put my cover crop in right away, I mean, it'll already be a foot tall in some areas by the time I get through my crop. So I do recommend that, you know, instead of waiting, it's best to get roots in the ground as soon as possible after you pull out your plants. So that's helpful.
Yeah, bridging that gap where the biology would go into hibernation straight, like there's no, you know, it's a week before there's got another root in the ground kind of thing.
Yeah, and you may have to, if you're like us, you may have to water the cover crop in. I mean, in years past, you know, we would get nice rain and we would never have to water the cover crop. It would just be fed by winter rains. But since we haven't had those well in many years, then I do have to water them in. But once they get established and we get a few rains, I usually don't water them until I'm ready to weed whack them down.
That's awesome, Christine. Well, Peter might start with the breeding questions he's dying to.
Okay.
Well, no, yeah, we might go straight back to octoploid, you know, genes of the dahlia. So when it comes to dominant and recessive genes, do you find that principle of dominant and recessive plays as much of a part when it's due to the fact that there is so many sets of genes?
It seems like, you know, I'm not a scientist, but, you know, when I ask my sister-in-law, who is, like, questions like that, you know, she says it's kind of tricky because octoploids have so much variation in them. And she did a lot of hybridizing of non-octoploids, and it was easier. There was a lot more predictable outcomes. She could say, well, if I cross X with Y, I'll get 50% of whatever she was doing out of it. And I don't really see that, but I do see that some varieties, like I've done some hybridizing with Cafe au Lait, it seems like it has very strong genes. It's sort of like in families, sometimes the kids look really different, even though it's the same two parents, and then other families, the kids all look the same. I mean, I know that's diploids and we're talking octoploids, but I have noticed sometimes I can say, oh, I bet that's got Cafe au Lait genes in it. And I'll look, and sure enough, I'll look at my tag and, you know, it will say it has it in it because, you know, the plants are kind of shorter. The flowers can be kind of inconsistent, you know, so some of that, some of those genes definitely come through. Yeah, I think what you're saying is like some varieties, the breeders have been using sort of similar cultivars for many years, and they kind of have it down with their look. And so if you bred with their hybrids, then you would probably, you'd be kind of piggybacking off of their the work that they've done for the last like 30 years. I mean, we all are kind of doing that anyway, because of someone, you know, had to take the species dahlia that has 8 petals, and then we have all these fully doubled, really thickly petaled dahlias, because, you know, hybridizers over hundreds of years have kind of piggybacked on all that. Yeah. But yeah, I do notice that some varieties, like they seem to be more predictable. And I think it is based on how the hybridizer that of the variety that I'm using, how much similarity he has in, or she has in her varieties that she's been using too.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we get some of those KAs, we know that we've got a good starting point, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think with Cafe au Lait, though, I mean, I don't know if it's true, but it's out there that, you know, there's different ways to, there are different hybridization strategies. And one of them is to take a seed and put it through radiation and kind of mutate it that way, or with chemicals and mutate it that way. And supposedly, I don't know if it's true, but that Cafe au Lait was one of those that was put through the radiation process, and then it threw out certain genes that are different, because that color is very unusual and hard to get, I would say.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, again, we're into that mad science kind of you know, genre of it. So with you, like your breeding program, I know that you have been working towards the brown dahlia. I know it's a big question, but when you're aiming for that, what is your thought process? Like, what are you trying to get 2 dahlias that are close to the color and breeding them together, or, you know, how are you trying to bring that out of the dahlia?
Right. Yeah. My sister-in-law, who's the hybrid with the, that's been doing hybridizing for 25 years. I called her and said, okay, this is what I want to do. What should I do? And she goes, well, you should have 3 or 4 different approaches to that, because she said, you're not really going to be sure what approach will work. So she said, why don't you try, you know, like hybridizing like a burgundy dahlia with say a terracotta dahlia, maybe that would work. Or maybe you should take your brownest dahlia that you have and hybridize it with your other brownest dahlia that you have and see what happens there. And don't throw away your first generation of those crosses, because then you're going to want to sib cross, or you want to grow out the seeds from that cross and then cross those together. So it gets a little complicated, but it's still kind of there's no formula for getting what you want. No. But my sister-in-law thinks that I should be able to get brown out of this, but you know, so far I haven't gotten it, but I've only been trying for a couple years now. So, you know, she said on some of the things she worked on for 15 years and really never got what she wanted. And you know, she has a lot more experience than I do in knowing kind of what to do. And you really do want to cross when you're crossing too, if you can, like really high quality to really high quality. So what she says is good in, good out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's say you have one that's clock faced and has a weak stem, you know, you wouldn't want to use that in your hybridizing program, because that may be something that you can never get rid of again. Mm-hmm. You could try, she would say, well, give it a try. Like, you got the color you want, but it's clock faced or downward facing and a weak stem. You could then breed it with something with a really strong stem, you know, and a good position off the stem. Like the bloom has a good position off the stem, but you know, so you it's hard, because sometimes like I find something that's a great color. It's not the greatest bloom, but I just love the color. She goes, well, give it a year to try and see if you can kind of fix it, you know, in a way fix it. But sometimes it's really hard to fix those traits that are kind of poor traits in dahlias.
Going back to the crossing within those generations, Because I think a lot of people, they get disheartened, they do the one generation, they don't find what they want, and then they scrap it and go, oh, well, that was a empty road, or that road was going nowhere. But really, they were just kind of on the cusp of, like, it might be that next generation where they find what they're after. And it's just a case of breeding within that generation to bring that out.
I feel like I'm kind of just understanding that in a way too. I mean, you know, you cross and you're lucky if the first generation you get what you want or get something amazing. In a way, you're kind of lucky. That's kind of lucky. And then when you start the next generation and crossing that, you've got a little more control. But most people do give up after the first year. I did for many years. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll throw that out, you know, and not try that cross again. But my sister-in-law is like, you can't do that. It's still in there. You just have to be patient and, you know, wait another year, cross the siblings together and see if you can bring something out that you were hoping for. Like on a brown dahlia, if you were hoping for brown, there may be brown in there because you cross those two colors that maybe make brown, but it didn't the first generation, but it might the second or the third or the fourth. You just have to be really patient. Sometimes that's hard for me, for sure. Mm.
And I think that comes down to, it's like, are you breeding with a goal in mind and you're working towards something, or are you just, you know, not that it's a worse approach or anything, but if you're just looking to find something beautiful in your garden that you've bred, then there is kind of, then just go for that single generation, I guess, and see if you find something that you like.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're trying to go for, like, if you look, like, the American Dahlia Society has the classification book, and it lists, like, different varieties that, you know, let's say you have three in Burgundy, but they have 15 in like an apricot color, you know, you may as a hybridizer want to look at things like that and say, what's missing? And make that your goal, because, you know, it would be nice to have more in, say, Burgundy that works if we already are kind of pretty full up on apricot. So some hybridizers definitely do that. And or they pick something like palms or water lilies that aren't a lot of, and just say, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to really concentrate on this for so many years. And then you can just change too. And then you're always watching. Never throwing out if it's something that's not in your goals, but because that could be just an amazing combination you did and it doesn't fit with your goals, but you're going to keep it because it's beautiful or you just like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think your method of growing, because you said before, it is a numbers game. I've been following your 4-inch pot method, and, you know, where the pots are literally pressed up against each other in rows. I love it. I know I've seen a few people going, oh, aren't the pots going to crack? But I think by the time you can assess the flower before the pot cracks, and by then you've ripped them out, you can rip those out. So I grew 125 last season and I kept 4 of those. And yeah, I maybe lost 10 pots because I was just ripping them out so much. Would you say that, like, what would be the minimum amount of dahlias seedlings that you would want to grow with the hope of finding something good? Like, out of 125, I kept 4. Would you say that's probably around what you're going to find?
That's good. Yeah, that's kind of what some people might keep a little bit more and grow them a second year and then cull again. And then grow them a third year and then cull again. So I think kind of on average, they say 2%. So out of 100 you grow, you keep 2 in the end. Because sometimes the second year they don't grow as well as you thought, or, you know, that you realize that the tubers didn't store well, or, you know, there's so many other things that kind of have to go right with it. Or maybe it ends up being kind of buggy, like the bugs love it for some reason more than something else. And you're just like, I don't want to work this hard if the bugs are just going to be all over it all the time.
Yeah, that I've found that too. If I have to put too much effort into it, it's just not worth it. You know, I just don't want to have a plan on life support if it's, you know, as good as the flower could be. Have you ever experienced, I've been mucking around a little bit with the dark foliage and bringing those traits out. Is that something, have you looked into breeding for leaf shape or leaf color?
Just a little bit, just starting this year. Out of the 1,000 that I grew, I got 1 dark foliage plant. So I'm really excited about that. That was something that just happened. And so I'm going to start breeding for some of the dark foliage. It's so pretty. I have a pink flower on like black foliage practically, and it's yeah. is beautiful, but the flower is kind of short on petal count. And so I'm going to breed with as dark a, another variety that has a dark, or not, I don't have any black. I only have, what's it, Landaff, the Bishop yes. of Landaff, but it's a single. So I would never breed to that. I mean, I like the dark foliage on it, but I wouldn't breed to it because it would be so hard to get out of a single. I mean, you would probably get singles and maybe even poor singles out of that. So I'm choosing the darkest foliage I have in my patch, and I'm with a flower that's pink with a lot of petal count, and I'm going to breed that back with the one that has dark foliage and a pink flower, and maybe in a formal decorative, because it's a formal decorative. It's a poor formal decorative right now. So I will breed like type together with the darkest foliage I can find in my patch and see if I can keep going with the dark foliage and see if I can make my dahlia like higher petal count, because I need that. I don't like it when it's yeah. short on petal count. It still happens, but I'll work on that for a little bit for sure. So this is my first year doing it. So next year, we'll see. I have to get out there and do some hybridizing too to it.
Yeah, I guess like sometimes it's like, yeah, even if you don't a breeding goal, you might just see potential in something. Like I can see the potential in that. I just need to kind of hone in on it and kind of chase it and see if I can bring that out in what I can see it can one day become. Type of thing.
Yeah. So, you know, you go down that rabbit hole for a while. You kind of give yourself like, okay, I'm going to try that for a couple years. You know, kind of depends how much you like it and whether you're willing to put in like 5 years or 10 years into it. I'm not super patient, so I probably wouldn't wait that. I wouldn't go that long. I would just go on to something else. But, you know, some people have a lot more patience than I do, I think.
Now, this is hard, Christine, and some people can't answer it. Your favorite all-time dahlia?
Oh, yeah, that's a hard one. I mean, usually it's kind of one of my seedlings right now because, but I do love Pam Howden. I don't know if you guys can grow that there. I think for a water lily, it's just beautiful. Yeah. You know, I kind of each variety, I kind of have my favorites. I love Winky Lambrusco for a palm. It's just so cute and fun. And then probably Kay's Papa John's my favorite right now in my seedling patch. And some of the new seedlings that are coming out, I'm really happy with too. So probably those. I love Winky. I love Pam Howden. Probably those. I started out with Ferncliff Illusion being my favorite, which is, I don't know if you know the Ferncliff varieties, but it's not, we're not my favorite anymore. So changes. That. Yeah.
And I'm guessing we have this question called the unicorn dahlia. I'm guessing it's the elusive chocolate that you're trying to breed, or is there one that you've always wanted but couldn't get? That has been on the market previously, or is it the chocolate, the proper chocolate?
I would like to do a proper chocolate for me. You know, I think there are other colors out there and other forms that could come forward. So I'm excited that there are a lot of people hybridizing dahlias, because I think we will come up with new forms too. And, you know, in the time that I've been growing dahlias, we started out with 21 forms, and I think now we have 27 forms or 29 forms. We're bringing in micro, which are dahlias under an inch. And there's not very many people hybridizing for that. No one's really concentrated on that, but the American Dahlia Society feels like hybridizers have been throwing out dahlias that look like that. So now they're trying to embrace that, bring in ones that are, you know, under 1 inch, that are formal decks, water lilies. I mean, can you imagine a water lily under an inch? I mean, how cool would that look, or an anemone under an inch? So I'm hoping that people will start, you know, hybridizing for that by, you know, hybridizing smallest to smallest and try to get a little bit smaller. And then with giants, I love hybridizing giants. They're really fun. They don't like to produce a lot of seed, and you kind of have to have a long dry season to get good seed from them because the seed head is so big and wet for them. Mm-hmm. So I remove all my petals. I try to do hand pollination with them, but I think the bees have done a better job than I am, that I have with hand pollinating, because they're really hard. I don't know if you guys have too wet of a season to get yours large.
Challenging for sure.
Yeah. I know, like, one of our hybridizers told me early on that if you want to get large dahlias, you should put them in first, like when you're putting your tubers in the ground, get them in as quickly as you can, because they take like 120 days to mature. So they take a longer time to mature. So maybe pre-sprouting them, you know, maybe making cuttings or something of those, and then you'd have a little bit longer season, a little drier season to maybe get them towards the end.
Mm-hmm. Get the seed from them. And Christine, I would say there's very few people that don't know your social media that listen to this podcast, but for those who don't, Santa Cruz Dahlias, and then Brian, your husband, is Dahlias Please, and he does a behind-the-scenes version of yours, I guess. It's awesome. And then your book, where can we find it and what is it called?
It's called Dahlia Breeding for the Farmer, Florist, and Home Gardener. So it's on Amazon. So you can buy it on Amazon, and you can get it in softcover, or you can get it just on your computer and read it that way. So it's about, I think it's US about $19 and $10 for you know, the computer, just to get it on your computer or your iPhone.
And both I own it and we love it. So thank you for creating it.
Yeah, you're welcome. The Bible. I know sometimes I'm like, I think I need to refer to this, and I get it out.
It's true. It is a step-by-step guide, and anyone can do it with that book. Thank you so much, Christine. It's been a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so much fun. I love talking about dahlias and hybridizing. So you gave me a gift today. Thank you.
The gift is ours, I have to say. But all the best for the rest of your season.
Okay, you too.
Awesome. Thanks, Christine. Have a great evening.
You're welcome.